Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Co-host for today's program on Ecuador's new media law is one of our producers, Glenda Ortega.
Thank you, David.
Glenda is with us on a fellowship from the Alfred Friendly Press Partners. Back home in Ecuador, she's a reporter with America Economía magazine. Ecuador's government made international news for two actions this week. Ecuador's foreign minister met with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange at the country's London embassy. Assange took refuge in Ecuador's embassy to avoid extradition to Sweden, where he faces questioning for alleged sexual assaults. The foreign minister's visit took place on the eve of the one-year anniversary of his embassy sanctuary. Ecuador makes the same argument as some free speech advocates that the United States is behind efforts to deport Assange so he can be prosecuted for releasing thousands of U.S. diplomatic correspondents. Meanwhile, Ecuador is drawing harsh criticism from free press advocates for its new media legislation. Glenda, tell us just a little bit about that proposal.
Thank you, David. On one side, the law proposed a more democratic distribution of the broadcasting frequencies. But in the other side, it includes sanctions for the journalists and content regulations. So this law passed after 4 years of confrontation between the president and some private media outlets and the creation of new public media outlets. My concern about the law is the regulations could be subjective, and also the law could increase the confrontation and polarization in Ecuador.
Okay. Now, on the line now are two Ecuadorian columnists. Martin Payares writes for El Comercio and has been a journalist for 23 years. Javier Flores writes columns for newspapers and on the website gkillcity.com. So just before we get into the specifics of this legislation now before President Rafael Correa, Javier, could you describe the media landscape in Ecuador for people who may not know in your perspective the distribution of the media generally in Ecuador?
Well, thanks for the interview. I think that you have to have in mind the background in which this law has been built. The first law that regulated media, at least not press media, but media, audiovisual media, was a law passed in the dictatorship of Rodríguez Lara back in 1975. And then it had a reform in the 90s, 1995. And this law, the original law from the dictatorship, then reform, had a strong benefit for private media. The fact is that whenever you had a communitary media, which is now ever since the Constitution is something that has to be improved by the government, but before communitary media can appear, it could not, because the law demanded that wherever the national media could have broadcasting signals, Not non-commercial media could appear. So the law had a landscape in which it benefited very strongly to media that had the capital, the money, to have more coverage of the signals that they broadcast. Okay. So whenever you think of it that way, you have to realize that very few people at the very end, have shaped the landscape of public opinion in Ecuador, and that this law proposed and passed, well, nowadays it's on the president's dispatch, but if he doesn't veto the law in about a month, the law will become law of the land. And whatever happens, it has It has two things that we have to discuss about the law. One, the content regulation that I agree with Glenn that it can be worrying, actually. But then it has the structural part. And the structural part is the one that really, I think that goes, that's a good law. I mean, the structural part means that you can change the landscape, introducing more chances and more opportunities to small non-profit media to emerge and to do work for their communities and for the country itself, because they will have the chance to express points of view that until today are spoken by anyone else, by everyone else, but anyone else but them. But what I mean is that I always thought that it's false to believe that very few people that have another background in many ways can speak for people that are not allowed to introduce their voices in their media.
Okay, let me Martin.
You know, in a very unequal just to finish the idea.
Okay.
In a very unequal country like Ecuador, that's simply false.
Okay, Martin. Now, what's your perspective on this?
Only few people can say things.
Martin, no, I guess.
Okay, I couldn't hear. Well, perfectly what Javier was saying, my biggest concern is it has to do with the regulator body that's gonna supervise what the media does. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start saying that the law declares communication as a public service. Okay. This means that all kind of communication provided by the media has to be under the scrutiny of the state. And when I say state, I mean government, because that's the way things happen in countries like Ecuador. And when I say government, I say party.
The ruling party.
The party that is on power. So this scrutiny or regulation is going to be done by two bodies that are created on the law. It's a regulatory council and a superintendency of communication. The big risk is that almost all of the members of these two bodies respond directly or not to the executive branch, to the government, to President Correa. That's what I mean.
So, go ahead.
It has been proved that Correa is a declared enemy of the independent media. You know? Mm-hmm. And when I say he's an enemy of the independent media, I'm not only talking about his actions against journalists and media outlets, but also because of the concept he has about media as a private business. Mr. Correa, as a lot of people here, mostly people who work for the government, are convinced that media shouldn't be owned by private entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. There's a fixed idea against any kind of media that is owned by private entrepreneurs. Okay, that's my main concern. Who's going to regulate? Who's going to decide how the provisions of the law are going to be accomplished, okay? Most of the provisions are very uncertain.
Okay.
They're not clear. So that opens a huge margin to these two bodies to regulate the way they consider is more fair for them.
Javier, do you...
There's a very funny figure on the law. It's what it's called media lynching.
It has
to do with basically with a character assassination.
Right.
This media lynching. It's when journalists repeat the same allegation multiple times. Okay.
Right.
My point of view is that if the same allegation is published a couple of times and it is decided that constitutes media lynching, then you cannot repeat it again. So you cannot, work or treat some issue two or three times, unless it's some other media outlet does the same thing, because that can be considered as a media lynching.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to ask Javier, what do you think about Martin said, because he's a like media lynching. So in this point, do you think that is a restriction for a journalist?
I think that what Martin has said raises issues on two principles that are involved in the communication process. One principle is diversity. You have to have a diversity of people expressing opinions to form an interesting landscape on public opinion. So you can have, you can realize that there are multiple takes on the same issue, and you can have your, you can form your opinion by contrasting them. And that enriches the communicational process. So I believe that a regulation that produces that diversity can become part of the normal life of a country, of a city, of a community, it makes the community or the city or the country better. So I believe that in that part, in the structural part, the principle of diversity, it's fulfilled with this law recently passed in Ecuador that is going to be approved probably in less than a month. And then the second principle in that we have to take into account is the principle of freedom, which is basic to the communications rights. And I mean, I think that we have to understand this principle in two ways. And there's one way that it's normally been understood in this context, that it's the normal way to understand it, which is I have the right to inform freely to you whatever I want. But then I think that ever since we have been discussing issues on communication and actually the Inter-American Court on Human Rights, which is the higher court on human rights for America, which is located in San Jose de Costa Rica, has said, for instance, that a citizen has the right to be properly and not manipulated informed by the people that has the opportunity to do so.
Right.
So I think that the freedom right, it also admits some sorts of regulation.
Well, yeah.
There's no such thing, this is utterly false, no such thing as an absolute right to expression, freedom of expression, not yeah. absolute right to freedom of expression. Nonetheless, I believe absolutely that there is an enormous right, but there are some limitations that actually are written in international covenants. For instance, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which allows for restrictions in cases of damaging the reputation or the dignity of a person, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights of the United Nations that says clearly that you cannot, for instance, express opinions of hate or apology of hate.
Javier, let's talk about this particular. Let's talk about this particular law in language. The proposed law stipulates that everyone in Ecuador has the absolute right to, quote, keep their personal communications secret. But the Miami Herald points out that the law would make what Assange is doing, releasing classified and secret communications, a punishable offense in Ecuador. Is that a fair comparison? Is that a fair point, Javier, and then Martin?
No, I don't think it's a fair comparison. It's like a comparison between shoes and ownership. The case is that the article that you're reading, the article 31, if I'm correct, it reads personal communications. And the case of Assange actually was not the case, a case like that. It has another type of communications that were not his, were public communications, and there is a public principle involved about knowing things that are important to all of us, not the personal life of Assange. Actually, who wants to know the personal life of Assange is the Sweden judiciary, so as an excuse to send them to the U.S.
Well, Martin, let me get your position on that.
Comparison is fair.
Martin, wouldn't
what's
your opinion on that?
I think the comparison is it's perfect. In Ecuador, it is banned not only by this law, but by some other previous laws. It is banned to make public any kind of information that is protected by security law. That means that if you have a video of some government officials doing some dirty business, and you put that video on air, you can go to jail. So what Mr. Assange or Mr. Snowden does, what they do in their field, that would be forbidden in Ecuador. So that's why I think that the comparison the Miami Herald does, it's just perfect. It's the way it is.
And let me quote what the Ecuador's Association of Newspaper Publishers says about this. They say the law would, quote, consolidate a state of propaganda in the country and strip citizens of the right to freedom of expression and of the right of access to information. Javier, are they off base, or are they, what's your opinion on that?
I think that there is an important issue to understand in the right to freedom of expression. It also belongs to the citizen, the right to be duly informed. And it's some duties imposed on the journalism as a profession that have to be fulfilled in order to accomplish with this idea of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. So that will be my first take. I don't think that all of the regulations, but I think that some of them are really complex to understand, at least to say. For instance, this lynching of the media, I think that it's... I don't see how that can stand in the law, because I don't see what background it has. Moreover, in some cases that maybe or not maybe media lynching, that's something open to discussion, but I think that put that in the law the way it is, it doesn't do any good to the legislation. But I think that other provisions, such as you have to have commentaries on the websites, for instance, I think that are duly identificated, the person who does it, or have a barrier to not put discriminatory comments. I think that makes sense. I don't believe that should be understood as an imposition, arbitrary imposition on a media involved in journalism. I mean, I think that should be accepted and not be understood as something arbitrary. But then I will agree that there are some provisions that are problematic, such as this media lynching we have talked about.
Okay. Before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbi.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at globaljourn.
Yeah, I want to ask Martin and then Javier. Government says private media is not independent media, that private media lies. What do you think about Martin?
Well, who decides who is lying? What's the true or what's untrue? The problem here is that who's going to decide that? It's going to be a regulatory body that it's which all members are going to belong to the government. It's the political party on power who's going to decide who's telling the truth. Who is making defamations or not? Once the political party in power is the one who's going to decide this or all the provisions of the law are going to be accomplished or not, then automatically you have a threatened freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. It's as simple and as easy as that. With a regulatory body in hands of the government, we have to be clear that we are under the government scrutiny. And that's the way it is.
And Javier, what do you think about that?
I don't think that it's as much important who decided as what he decided. Because there are facts involved. I mean, if you have facts, you can have a proper knowledge of the situation and have a very good resolution on it based on them. But I don't believe that as no one is capable to be duly informed of the whole truth, no one can say whether it's true or not. I mean, it's quite simple, actually, and it has been said by the Inter-American Court on Human Rights. Again, I quote it because it has been used in Ecuador pretty much to discuss issues about freedom of expression that I can only imagine that somebody like the Inter-American Court on Human Rights is very proper to have in mind whenever we talk about this issue. But what I believe is that the duty of a journalist is not so hard to accomplish. You have to have critical distance from your interviewer to your interview, and you have to contrast the thing he said with the facts you have. If you have done an investigation before, you can know if whatever he says is true or is not. I mean, what I believe is that if a body, let's call it some governmental body, it's no problem, I think that you in the United States have the same case. Isn't the FCC a governmental body whose head is appointed by the president?
Okay, since you brought up...
In the same token, I don't know any anybody that has to deal with public policies that is not governed by the head of the government itself or someone he appoints to do so. I think that happens in Spain, that happens in country in which it's a ministry, it's a secretary, as you call it, the one who is in charge of dealing with those issues. It goes also for Italy or for France. So I think that what has been done here is to establish a governmental body like in any other country civilized in the world, and that body has to deal with some issues regarding communication. But I think that if you have the facts and you can prove something, that it's something judiciary people do every day of their life, then you shouldn't have to deal with it.
Well,
otherwise, you just want to blame always the government for everything, but that's another issue, a less interesting one.
Okay, Javier, you raised the comparison with the United States. Now, if this law were in effect in the United States, what would happen to broadcast outlets like Fox News, for example, which tends to skew the news in a conservative way, and say MSNBC, which skews the news in a more leftist manner and attacks. If Fox News attacks Obama, they can get charged criminally under the Ecuador's law. Isn't that correct?
Depends on the case. I don't watch that much American television, not television at all, actually, not only not American. So I don't know exactly what we're talking about when we're saying Fox News will be in charge for anything they said. But I think that it could be a problem, certainly, and it can be a problem here too, actually. I agree with that. There is always the chance that in the subjective opinion, some political bias will take part and make things worse. I believe firmly that there is a chance that may happen. But there is a chance with that in any kind of decision of judicial adjudication. I mean, it will always be a problem whenever you have someone that has to say something because you don't really know why he's saying it, unless he does it publicly and motivated. And that's the thing we have to take of this governmental body, that whenever they decide something, they do it with the proper way in which a right should be adjudicated, with the proof on the hand and with the reasoning on the other hand, and making it a reasonable outcome of the resolution itself. So I really think that the law has critical aspects, but the law has also some things that are beneficial. I think that having a diversity of opinions that will be an outcome of the law if it applies correctly, I think that will enhance our comprehension of the community in which we live in. I really do believe that, and I salute that from the law.
Okay, let's...
The other things that are critical, well, we have to discuss it, and we have to see what happens whenever they take in charge this governmental body and they start to adjudicate right.
Yeah, well, it's hard to predict what will happen, but let's look at Correa will be deciding who's on this commission, and let's briefly summarize Correa's relationship with the media since he took office in 2007 mm-hmm. to see if there's some sort of bias there. I understand he's pushed for libel convictions against journalists with multi-million-dollar judgments, and he has this weekly television program. And Martin, doesn't he use this program to harshly criticize the media?
Oh, yes, he does. Not only the media, not only the outlets, also the journalists. He has called me, he has treated me as a coward, as a fool, that I'm not, I wouldn't dare to go and tell him face to face what I'm writing about him in some articles.
He but
I'm
Martin.
A sick guy.
Okay.
He has repeated that like four times, I think, in different shows.
But Martin, I saw the confrontation is, for example, not just the president said to the journalists. I think that many journalists said many things to the president too. I mean, this environment is we have like a lot of confrontation and polarization in Ecuador. So we have another in one side, like journalists saying ignorant to the president and many insults, and also the president said insults to the journalist.
Yes, but you cannot think of a precedent of a statement acting as the same way the other people act. He works for the people of the country. He's been paid for by all the taxpayers. He cannot use the money of the state for insulting him. And there's a democratic principle that says that a statement, a president in this case, has to be tolerant.
Okay.
The president has to be under the scrutiny of the people. And that's something that in the United States it's quite respected. Okay. You've seen people calling Mr. George Bush a donkey or whatever. And you didn't see George Bush filing lawsuits, libel lawsuits to these people.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. It's been a fascinating discussion, and we'll have to see how this plays out in the coming weeks and months to see how this law affects journalism in Ecuador. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today were Ecuadorian editor Martin Payares and columnist Javier Flores. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Glenda Ortega, whose fellowship is funded by the Lee Hills Chair in Free Press Studies, was our co-host. Please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.